Hello and welcome to Brussels Unplugged. It's winter, it's December, we're all getting ready to leave. By now it's Christmas when you hear us, or you're deep in the holidays. But today we have a very, very special guest. With us today, we have the former ambassador of El Salvador, the first country to adopt Bitcoin as its legal tender in 2021. Currently the director of the Ambassador Insider Series at the Brussels Times, Hugo Ortiz Dubon. But Hugo, before we get into all this complex things, it is the holidays. Let's start with you. Let's start with you because your story is truly amazing. You're originally from El Salvador, raised in Sweden, but you're both. Tell us more.
Welcome, Hugo, by the way. Welcome to Brussels Unplugged.
Thank you very much, Pietro and Matteo. And what an introduction. I felt that. yes, the holidays is here. So, yeah. Thank you very much for having me in the show.
My pleasure.
And I'm also happy to be here and to have a little bit of more conversation. And I forgot about the question you asked me before.
Right. Tell us a bit about your story. How is it being the ambassador of a country but having two cultures in you?
First of all, for me, it's an honor, first okay. of all, because as you mentioned very briefly, I was born in El Salvador, and mm-hmm. due to the situation in the 80s, I had to leave my country with my family. Mm-hmm. And the Sweden was at that moment very different of refugee processes and okay. quotation refugee, and I had the opportunity to grow up in Sweden.
Okay.
So that's also an opportunity for me to you know, represent both of the two countries that is part of me, and to also go back and represent my country of origin as a refugee kid mm-hmm. in Sweden. It's very, very honorable, mm-hmm. but also very inspiring to also come from the diaspora and represent my community, El Salvadorians, here in Europe as well.
Fantastic.
How was it? I mean, that's what I'm curious when I heard your story. How was indeed this mix of two cultures? And especially I'm curious to know how is being an ambassador in Brussels? Because, you know, we always link Brussels to Parliament, Commission, European institutions. But of course, there are ambassadors. You were ambassador to the EU. So how is it the daily life of an ambassador?
Very intense.
I bet.
And I think that you're not prepared to what you are presented and what you have on the table and all the negotiations and meetings and levels and, you know, nuances that is Brussels. I've not been in diplomacy before. I work international relations, but coming in here from outside private sector as well, policymaking in Sweden, was a different world. It was a different world. And I think also that something that I have the opportunity to understand now is that Brussels is different as a destination to be an ambassador compared to the rest of the world. And it's because, not only because you're talking directly to 27 countries, but it's also because there is the bilateral relations, the regional relations with the EU, and also the regional relations to the EU. So it's Central America, in my case, El Salvador, and the Americas towards LATAM and the Caribbean as well, mm-hmm. towards the European Union. So it's different. It's different. It's very hectic. It's long days, 16 hours. You have the opportunity to try out the Brussels restaurants. You eat a lot of stars.
All right.
But at the same time, it's a lot of different meetings that you have that sometimes you were not thinking about. It's not a 8-to-5 job. It's all the time.
But those lunches, those restaurants, it's part of the diplomacy, you know? It's part of the way how you interact.
I think that it's very important to have those physical meetings. I was appointed in 2019. So I became an ambassador shortly before COVID.
Yeah.
So I was part of that generation of ambassadors here in Brussels that need to adapt to a more digitalized world. And that was something that I have was not in mind to have it, because when you are a diplomat, you need to have those interactions, those social interactions. You know, the dinners, the meetings, the drinking a coffee, the going to a restaurant, going to a vernissage, to an art session, meet some new people, and have those spaces where you can interact with other human beings. At the end of the day, we are building relations.
Indeed.
Fantastic, fantastic. Thank you, Hugo. I just wanted to take the chance and touch upon something that you briefly mentioned about the changing world of diplomacy and the digitalization of it. What are some lessons? Because a lot of our listeners are from the EU bubble, mm-hmm. or the extended EU bubble. What are some lessons there from the digitalization of diplomacy?
For me, it was easier because I come from the tech industry.
Okay.
And I come from entrepreneurial startups, mm-hmm. in Sweden. So for me, was we already had this gig economy, you know, consultancy from sitting in other countries and working with projects within specific Sweden at that time. But so for me, it was easy to adapt. But the interesting part was, how can we make the change within my institution, in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, to understand that it's possible to work abroad and to be on a Zoom meeting and have a very constructive and proactive work. And that was also the challenging part, because an institution like the European Union, to adapt that rapidly, mm-hmm. It was very difficult as well. So, you know, everyone knows that at the beginning, when you didn't mute in the meetings, you can hear everything. And that was very, very funny, you know. And I think that was a part of also bringing the majority into the digitalization that has happened after COVID.
When Pietro introduced you, he mentioned, of course, your country, El Salvador, and that was the first one to adopt Bitcoin. Can you tell us a bit more about it? Like, take us like we are completely ignorant about it. So tell us, what was so special about
it? How was that 16-hour day?
And what is about your country, that was so special about the Bitcoin and all of that?
You know, El Salvador is the smallest country in Latin America. Mm-hmm. And also, the vision that the president had in the first mandate was to also do things differently. He came from a movement. He wanted to do something different in the governance and also in the policies that were created. So this is actually one of the first interview outside of my role where I can be more freely speaking about what I saw in the different processes when I was working with El Salvador. One of the things that was interesting is that it was not only that, oh, let's do a PR campaign and connect it to Bitcoin and make it like the first country in the world. It's not like that. Has been a team that has worked with understanding where is the financial system going towards the future. And that has been something that, you know, what is coming, we were seeing a new wave of the Web3. We were seeing new initiatives. Bitcoin was in the horizon. So he was already seeing if there is something that can be connected to something we can do with the country, where we can try out this new system and position ourselves in the front road for the upcoming, you know, wave within the...
It was really a vision. It was not just a publicity stunt. That's what I'm...
It was not a publicity stunt. So, but the thing is, like, another thing is, what I understand of how the government interacted during my time is also, we connected very much to experts, people that were well navigated into the different communities, in this case to the Bitcoin community. And to launch as the smallest country, with that being said, the smallest economy in the continent, it doesn't mean that you cannot think like a big country in your investments of policies that you can do. And I think that that is something that is happening not only in El Salvador, but in many countries from the south, is to start envision the future and how can their countries position themselves into this new era as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would like now, that's very interesting. I would like now to, you mentioned that this is the first interview probably where you can speak freely about your previous your previous job. And again, linking to what Pietro said when he introduced you, let's go back to the second part of you. So you left your career as your diplomatic career as ambassador, which is quite uncommon. You know, usually when people get into diplomatic career, they try to stay there for the rest of their lives. But you took quite a bold decision to leave it and go and pursue your entrepreneurial career. Can you tell us a bit how that came from? And especially you did that, deciding to stay in Brussels, which is a city that many people hate. And they always, our friends, our colleagues say, yeah, I hate Brussels. I'm staying here only for the job. But, you know, as soon as I can, I escape. And you did quite the opposite. You left the job and you stayed here.
It's a beautiful city. Not because of the weather. It's a hub for culture, a hub for music, a hub for politics, diplomacy. So it's actually not only the capital of Europe, but it's a centrum where you can meet, you know, many of the aspects that I like. So that was one of the incentives that I stayed, but also being in a position where, you know, I come from the private sector. I come from creating policies. I come from working international affairs with companies, but also the Swedish government and institutions from the Swedish government. So for me to stay here to strengthen my network was something that I could do in the position of being an ambassador. But also, I also got the understand the aspect of how to, you know, it's not only the European Union and creating, you know, policies for the rest of the member state countries. But it's also, we have a very big agenda as a country in third region in relations to the European Union. And also the European Union towards other regions outside of Europe. So the thing is, like, this is an opportunity to, you know, to interact where it's happening, having interesting discussions. And that's why I also decided to stay here. Why I left, it's because I appreciate the private sector. I appreciate it. You know, you're more, how can you say, the golden cage. You like the golden, but you don't like the cage. And being in the private sector, you have an opportunity to interact in a different way.
Fantastic, fantastic, Hugo. Before we jump into our unplugged recommendations, I did want to bring a little bit back to Bitcoin, because on a previous episode we had on Serena Di Lucio from Positive Money Europe, and we discussed a bit about the future of finance, and there's been a lot of talk about Bitcoin as essentially to hedge risk within portfolios, almost on the par of gold, and it's shown that in volatility, especially in the US, it was really good to hedge that. I just wanted to get your what do you think about this?
I think it's, thank you for the question. It's very interesting. Something that I've seen in this years of the implementation of the Bitcoin legislation in El Salvador and creating the infrastructure of the digital decentralized finance infrastructure of the Bitcoin in El Salvador. First of all, I need to be very clear. It's only one country in the world that has done it. It's El Salvador. You know, you can talk about the risks, you can talk about the potential, but if you don't do it and don't try to create an infrastructure and, you know, do like a sandbox, trial and error, it's very difficult to know if it's going to work or not. And, you know, during my time when I was an ambassador, I had a lot of interactions with MEPs at the European Parliament to tell them, see us as a pilot, see us as a country that is changing the legislation, implementing new policies, creating incentives for attracting the sector to El Salvador, creating a hub of an tech hub in El Salvador, a country that nobody knew about before. The president said Bitcoin's going to be our new currency. So this is actually the first in everything. But now seeing after a couple of years, what we have created at work, what El Salvador is creating is creating a digital financial infrastructure that no country has for the moment. So it's a very good pilot to see for many countries in the South. And that's also what I have seen, that many countries in the South are inspired by El Salvador. And they are trying to not copy-paste, but learn from the experience of El Salvador and see how they can implement it in their region as well.
Well, I want to share with our listener, an anecdote that we had while we met Ugo in preparation for this episode. Pietro, we can release the fact that we meet our guest in advance to explain them and to debrief about the episode. So that's not a secret. But once we talk, remember with Ugo about the reasons why you stayed in Brussels, and especially the fact that, you know, many people complain about it and they don't really want to stay. You say something that really stuck with me, and it is that you compare Brussels to a diamond, you know? I mean, and that was really something that I want to bring on air today. I mean, it's Christmas Day when you're going to listen to this, and I think that it's a nice metaphor to live with the Christmas. I mean, many experts are probably back home. They're not in Brussels today, for sure. But can you please share the idea of why Brussels is a diamond?
It's because diamond is very, like a little diamond you have to discover. But when you see the beauty of the diamond, it starts to unveil and, you know, present for yourself the beautiful parts of itself. And that's what Brussels is. If you're open for Brussels, you will find many and discover many new things. That happens to me even after 5 years. I can walk in a new street and I was like, oh, is this part of Brussels that's so beautiful, you know? So we live actually in a city that is very small, but it has this beauty of a diamond. And I am discovering it every day, and that's why I really like it.
Well, I guess this is a perfect time to ask you, how do you unplug, Hugo?
In Brussels?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
okay,
of course.
First of all, I've become a very big art lover here.
Fantastic.
It's, as you know, a mecca of contemporary art, and underestimated from many within the bubble, because they really didn't have discovered the beauty and the hub it is. I saw it from outside when I visited Venice a couple of weeks ago at the Biennale in Venice, and came back and was like, we have so many galleries here with high level of artists presented just in our own, like, in our own city. And, you know, one of the galleries that are one of my favorite, if you want to know.
Yes.
Yeah, sure. Feel free.
Is actually Edgy Gallery.
Oh, love Edgy. Absolutely.
You've been there.
Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely.
Nice. Edgy Gallery is by two queer partners in life and in business. Mm-hmm. And the beauty that I discovered through them is because they have the eye of discovering talent outside of Europe. Artists that are up and coming, that are representing different perspective. And every time I go there, I discover also a new world outside of Europe, but in Brussels. And that's the beauty.
Well, I mean, I think we bridge to Positive Money. We bridge with the episode that we had on Art Nouveau. You know, Ugo is a bit a great guest to wrap up our first half a year of Brussels Unplugged, because, you know, you have the artistic side, you have the diplomatic side, the economic side. So it was great to hear all of this together. We could also trace back and link to our previous episodes. Mm-hmm. Pietro, your Christmas Brussels Unplugged recommendations.
Well, as my family knows, I'm going to go to the bookstore and pick books that remind me of everybody and give them one. But recently, I've actually just been quite relaxing and just watching a lot of movies. One that I just rewatched was The Gentlemen. Have you guys ever saw it?
I actually seen it. It's a series, right?
There's a series, but also the movie.
Oh, the movie.
Ah, yes. Absolutely. I watched the series
as well.
Fantastic series, but as it goes, I think the movie is better. So it's I highly encourage that, during your wind down and your unplugging. Matteo.
Well, for Christmas, I'm going to unplug a lot by reading, which is something I haven't done recently, and watching a bit more TV series. I'm in the process of finishing a TV series. I'm on the fourth season, but there are still one more to go. Boardwalk Empire, one of those.
Ooh, yes.
You watch it?
I watched parts of it years ago.
Yeah, though. It's one of those series that they still used to do, you know, long episodes. Yeah. was released in 2012, so it's a bit old. Mm-hmm. There are six seasons, which are this kind of having, they don't do anymore these long TV series. They do just nowadays, they do like short seasons with four or five episodes. Mm-hmm. This had 12 episodes per season, and it's about an Irish bootlegger, I mean, in the U.S., is based in the U.S., in Atlantic City, and, you know, it's about the during the Prohibition era, mm-hmm. so about the Irish mafia interlinked with the Sicilian mafia, and, you know, it's the story develops, and it's the main actor is Steve Buscemi, that you might remember him from The Reservoir Dogs, one of the first Tarantino's movies. So, and he's the main actor. So it's quite worth it, and it still has quite a flavor to it that I like it. So recommend it, but it's long. It's a long journey. So
no, but thank you for the recommendation. That's good for the holidays.
It's perfect. I mean,
absolutely.
If you have not much to do during holidays, which I hope that you all manage to rest. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, Pietro, first of all, let's wish our listeners a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Absolutely.
We are going to see each other again on the podcast.
In the new year. In the new year, Matteo.
On the new year, on the 25th of January, but we're going to have some surprises there.
Absolutely.
We're not going to reveal anything, but
nope.
First of all, thank you.
Thank you, Hugo.
Thank you.
It was fantastic. And to our listeners, see you the next 25th.
Thank you very much.
Have a nice holidays. Bye.
Bye.